Somebody's rights definitely got violated. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is my co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be with you again, Barry. This is the first time we've been actually even recording a show now for what? I don't know how many weeks.
I don't want to say how long it's been, but I'm grateful to our listeners that they're okay with hearing the things that we teach at Camp American, because that's what we've been playing most of on Saturdays are they're DVDs, but you're putting them on audio.
Yeah, I'm capturing the audios
of the teachers that we have teaching our constitutional framework, our biblical heritage, and the application of such to our current state of affairs in this country to our kids at Camp American. And folks, just a little quick plug, Camp American. We are getting ready for the 2014 Camp American, so visit campamerican.com to find out some information and maybe register very early so you can get those deep, deep discounts so that your kids can enjoy this training as well.
Gee, and who's one of our teachers that sometimes teaches at Camp American?
Well, let me think. We got a bunch of those, but
I think three of them online with you right now.
That's right. Three of them are online with us right now. And, Chuck, that kind of leads me to what we want to talk about today. There has been some interest, I'll put it that way, in some of the things that we teach, specifically the Institute on the Constitution course that you and I and our guest, who I'll introduce in a moment, teach regularly throughout the state of Ohio. For most of our longtime listeners, they know what Institute on the Constitution is, but for the folks just joining us or are fairly new to what we do, Institute on the Constitution is a 12-week course that is taught by live instructors and with video instruction to teach the constitutional and biblical heritage of our country. It is a fast-paced and exciting class. It's 2 hours, hour and a half to 2 hours a night for 12 straight weeks, and you go through from our Christian history all the way up through modern issues and problems of our constitutional republic. Now, you would think, Charles, that in itself would be something that a lot of people, and as we're finding, a lot of adults are taking those courses. They're signing up and they're joining us. As a matter of fact, our guest that we're going to be talking to here in a minute has graduated over 2,000 people in the last 2 to 3 years on Institute on the Constitution. And so we're getting a lot of people who understand the document better and understand how to use it in order to protect their liberties. Now, it would make sense, Chuck. It would be common sense that it would be a great thing, and this is what we do at Camp American, is to teach younger people about this heritage, about this document, and about how it's supposed to be reasonably and correctly interpreted and used in order to preserve the liberties that were handed to us from our founding generation. But, as our guest is going to tell you, that road is not so easily traveled, especially when you're dealing with the government school system. Well, without further ado, I want to introduce our guest. Our guest is Ricky Pepin. Ricky is a senior instructor in Ohio with Institute on the Constitution, a homeschooling mother. I believe all of her kids are now out of school, and what I would call a constitutional liberty activist. Ricky, welcome to Principles and Policies. We're glad to have you on today.
Well, I appreciate the chance to be able to share the real story after so many things were appearing in media that weren't exactly accurate.
Oh, are you saying that the media might have gotten something wrong?
Maybe just a couple things.
I'm shocked, Ricky. I'm totally shocked by that.
I know.
Well, you know, before we get into the story, you know, I do a pretty poor job of giving your bona fides and your background. So why don't you, for our listeners, just give them a little brief thumbnail of who Ricky Pepin is and what she's all about.
Well, you gave it a pretty good synopsis, because primarily I'm a wife, a mom, and a grandma. My husband is a retired colonel in the Air Force. We spent 30 years moving all over creation. And during that time is when I began homeschooling my kids, just because we were moving so much, there just wasn't a whole lot of stability in our lives. And that's when I discovered revisionist history that absolutely shocked and appalled me. And I went from hating history to actually loving history when I learned the stories from primary source documents. And
right. If I may jump in there real quick, Ricky, when you say revisionist history, what we're really saying, ladies and gentlemen, is mainly what they're teaching in public schools now.
That's right. That's exactly
because what you're getting in history classes and government classes in the vast majority of public schools, not only in Ohio but throughout the country, is a healthy dose of revisionist history, which means that we're going to take history, and because we don't like how the unvarnished truth looks, we're going to varnish it up quite a bit and put a spin on it so that it meets our predisposed philosophical and psychological biases. And usually those people who are writing the textbooks are liberals.
Correct. Yeah, I just had a comment, as a matter of fact, from one of the students, two of the students in my class last night when we watched Lesson 2, which is all about Columbus, Cortez, and Magellan, and the real story from primary source documents. And this woman is a PhD, and she teaches, and her son's a teenager, you know, taking government classes, and they emailed me and said, we learned more in your 90-minute class last night than we did in the entire time we've spent in history classes in school.
Well, we get that. Chuck and I get that as well from people who are former history teachers in public schools.
Exactly.
I had one of my students in one of my classes actually break down crying.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a gentleman in his 70s breaking down crying because he said, I just realized I did a disservice to my students.
I had a teacher come up to me with tears in her eyes from a Christian school telling me she felt like she needed to go back and apologize to all of her students through the years after what she learned that night. So, well, at any rate, that's what kind of led me to learning about the Institute on the Constitution was when I was homeschooling way back in 1995. And when I saw the curriculum the first time, it was actually at a conference in Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. John Eidsmo, the video instructor, was actually there teaching it. And it was one of those moments when my heart was about to beat out of my chest because I couldn't exactly tell you why, but I knew God was letting me know that I not only had to learn how to, or not to only take the course, but had to learn how to teach it. And for the first 14 years, I would graduate about 20 to 30 people, every 2 to 3 years. And then all of a sudden, when I started praying and asking God how I could put feet on this, in other words, teach people how to use it, not just studying about it, he brought to mind this principle approach to education, which I had actually authored 2 books using this principle approach that people really like, because again, it doesn't tell them what to think, it teaches them how to think. And when I added that to this Constitution course is when it exploded, and instead of 20 or 30 people, we graduated 2,000 in the last 2 to 3 years. So it's just been a phenomenal difference, people not just learning, but people doing. And that's actually a great segue, because that's why I actually got invited to Springboro Schools in the first place, was the board had heard about the results that we were having with our graduates going out and getting involved in the community. And that's what they want to teach the kids, is how to get involved in the government, which is a good thing. And so they said, show us what you're doing, you know, that we're not doing, and we want to see that. So I went in and gave a brief presentation to them, and the results were mixed, shall we say. Some people really thought it was a great idea, others did not. But in all honesty, the way they wanted to approach it originally was simply the kids here, in the school systems here, juniors and seniors have to do 30 hours of community service each year. And they wanted to offer this course, you know, after school hours, just on a volunteer basis, as one of the options with which the kids could use to meet that criteria, that requirement for community service. And so, I mean, they were going to, the government, quote unquote, wasn't going to be involved in buying textbooks or endorsements or anything, because it was totally voluntary. The kids bought their own books. It was after school hours. It wasn't for course credit. It was just a requirement of one of their extracurricular activities.
Okay. Well, Ricky, if I may jump in for just a quick second, I think you said something a little bit earlier on that I think is a very key theme that I want our listeners to understand. This course doesn't teach you what to think.
Right.
It teaches you how to think.
That's right.
And there is a world of difference between those two approaches to pedagogy in relation to education.
There sure is.
Because really what we have now in most of our government school systems, and I would have to say, sadly, in many of our private and Christian school systems, is they're teaching people what to think. They're basically saying, you must know this particular set of facts and these particular frameworks, and you must be able to recite them back to us, instead of teaching people how to take disparate pieces of information, look at the original sources, look at how it was utilized, and then project from there how it's supposed to be addressed in a modern setting.
Very well said. I mean, kids come out today from high school and from college hating America, and they just haven't been, they were taught what to think. You know, they were not given all of the facts, as you said, and then allow themselves to sift through that and pull the truth out of it, the good and the bad. I mean, for example, you know, Christopher Columbus, Cortez, you know, they did some pretty bad things, but they also did some very good things. And the history books only portray and magnify the bad ones and don't even touch on the good ones. And kids come out, as I said, you know, with a point of view that's just totally been poured into them instead of allowing them to think it through by seeing the good, the bad, the ugly. But at any rate, they from that point, the next point in the story, after thinking about considering this for the requirement for community service, there was quite an uproar even over that. And so the board backed off and said, okay, how about we just open this class up to the whole community? And, you know, students can come if they want to, parents can come, teachers can come, you know, people who aren't even in the school system, anybody who wants can come to this class. And review the packet, and then when you're done, come back to us and give us your feedback as to whether or not you feel it's appropriate for us to offer this as, you know, an option for meeting their community service requirements. Once again, just backing off even of what to me was a very good way to introduce it. Well, it just literally hit the fan, as they say, when they started seeing the fact that there was a religious slant to it. And when people asked me that, the one reporter I finally gave an interview to, I didn't call a lot of them because I knew they just wanted to bury me, but one of them that I did call that I thought would be fair, I said, let me tell you what the religious slant is to this course. The Pilgrims wrote in the Mayflower Compact that the purpose of their voyage was to glorify God and the advancement of the Christian faith. That's their words in the Mayflower Compact. I didn't write that. They wrote that. It's in the document, therefore I teach it, because we teach from the founding documents. The Declaration of Independence declares that all men were created equal. I didn't write that. The founders wrote it. That presupposes a creator God. It's in the document. I teach it. The Constitution, which everybody claims is a godless document, actually is signed in the year of our Lord, which time dates everything to Jesus Christ, and they all signed it. I didn't write that. It's in the document. I teach it. So is there a religious slant? Yes, there is. But did I put it there? No. I'm just teaching the documents as they read.
Well, and I think that that's very important, that this is just exposing people to what our founders actually put down on paper, and wrote, and believe themselves.
Exactly.
And I think that's very powerful, because I know when we teach the classes, I get many people who are like, well, I don't believe that. And then you take them directly to the quote,
right,
from the source, and they sit there with this shocked look on their face like, I never knew that. I was never taught that in school.
Yeah.
And, well, there's a reason why people were never taught these things in school. And it isn't because there's just not enough time in the school day to teach everything. It's because we're being extremely selective and selecting out anything that would have any kind of a Christian foundation. It's a reason why it took 10 years in Ohio to actually put a law on the books to actually require, now this is probably will shock some of our listeners, we had to actually put a law on the books to require schools to teach our founding documents as part of their history or their civics courses.
Well, and as someone who testified on that particular bill,
yes,
as
you did.
I believe you did as well.
Yes, I did as well.
We had to fight tooth and toenail to actually get the Democratic caucus to acquiesce. Well, they didn't really have much choice, since on the committee that they were in the minority on the committee that we were testifying in front of. However, they threw up a big stink, and I can tell you that one guy who especially gave me trouble, I brushed him aside pretty handily, but is now in jail for essentially being a fraudster. It's interesting to me that the same people who are committing essentially crimes while in office are in opposition to the teaching of American history, the Constitution, the founding documents in schools.
Well, if I could share a story in here too, Chuck, because it really answers back too. You know, in colleges today, the professors largely say that the founders were atheists, agnostics, and deists, that they were not Christians. And yet, when I made a presentation to somebody very high up in the Department of Education in Ohio, I had an 11-page presentation, and partway through it, very matter of fact, very early on into it, the gentleman that I was meeting with threw the pages down on the table and told me that he was highly offended by my entire presentation. And when I asked him what in the world it was that offended him, he said, it is obvious from everything that you have on these pages that's in boldface print that you have an overt Christian agenda. Well, I almost started to laugh because I said, excuse me, but I didn't write what's in boldface print. And he's like, what do you mean you didn't write that? This is your presentation. I said, yes, it is. But everything that's in there in boldface print is a direct quotation from the founding documents. Are you telling me that you find the founding fathers or the founding documents offensive? But even beyond that, he just identified their quotations as overtly Christian. And in the university,
there's a good reason for that, isn't there?
Well, there is. And in the universities, they teach that they were atheists, agnostics, and deists. And yet when he read their quotations, look at the conclusion he immediately came to.
Well, and if I remember correctly, this is the State Department of Education, and this is the superintendent of curriculum that you're talking to.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Who doesn't even understand when he sees a quote from the founding documents.
Right.
That's how far we slipped, ladies and gentlemen. We actually have people who are making the decisions at the state level on what curriculum frameworks are being put in place for your local school districts to have to follow, who, number one, doesn't recognize a founding document when he reads out of it, and number two, is personally offended because it's too Christian. Well, you know what? I say bravo, Ricky. I think that is a beautiful spotlight on the fact that there has been an intentional effort that's been put forth for decades to whitewash the Christian foundation of this country. Now, I'm not a Christian nationalist, and I saw on a lot of these,
a lot
of the media reports, the term Christian nationalists were put in place. Now, I'm far from a Christian nationalist, as Chuck is sitting here laughing because he knows that. But the point is that, you know what? If we're not honest about where we came from, we're certainly not going to know where we're going to.
Well, and we're not giving our kids that foundation to build upon. I mean, the same gentleman who was so offended by the Christian content had in the history standards of what you're talking about, Barry, when that bill SB 165 was passed to require the teaching of the founding documents in the schools, part of the curriculum that I was reviewing actually said that kids' rights, again, you know, when we teach the Constitution class, we teach according to the documents that your unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness come from God. And in the current textbooks, it actually says that your rights have to be earned either through community service or military service. And it continues on to say that, and there are times those rights will have to be yielded for the common good. When I teach that or share that in the Constitution classes, I ask the people, do you know, does anybody recognize where that phrase comes from? And one person yesterday said, that was Hillary Clinton. I said, no, it wasn't Hillary. And so somebody else says, Karl Marx. I said, that's right. It's in the Communist Manifesto. Not only are we not teaching our kids about our rights coming from God and about the fact that our laws are derived from the laws of nature and nature's God, we're actually teaching them the tenets of the Communist Manifesto.
Well, you know what, Ricky? I'll tell you what, you're right. It does go all the way back to the Communist Manifesto. But this whole idea about you may have your rights are ones you earn,
right,
and they may have to be given up for the common good, it has also been put down in this country by certain in interest groups. And Chuck and I have talked about this on other programs, and I think maybe we've mentioned this to you before, but there was an effort in the late 60s, early 70s, funded by the Ford Foundation, to create a new constitution for the United States of America.
Right.
And it was headed up by a gentleman who worked in the Roosevelt administration originally, and who had written the World Constitution for the United Nations by the name of Rexford Tugwell. Now, Tugwell wrote a book on his experiences because, you know, obviously that was part of the funding, is they were going to pump a book out in order to soften people up to this new document that was going to magically appear at some point. And the book is called The Emerging Constitution. And it has a proposed constitutional model in it. And the funny thing is, as you were saying, what you were just referencing there about what you read, remember, these were from proposed standards for history and government that our state Board of Education is going to be trying to adopt later this summer. Because they are moving that direction, either later summer or in the fall. That basically this proposed constitutional model starts, it says, and I'll just go to just a quick excerpt, Ricky. I don't know if you've ever read this before or not. But the preamble to this new model called the Constitution of the New States of America says, so that we may join in common endeavors, welcome the future in good order, and create an adequate and self-repairing government, we the people do establish the new states, all one word, new states, of America, herein provided to be ours, and do ordain this Constitution whose supreme law it shall be until the time prescribed for it shall have run. You see, this Constitution's not enduring every, I think, 20 years. It has to come up for a plebiscite to be revoted on. But basically, in Article 1, you have rights and responsibilities, and then you have your A section is your rights. And first thing, freedom of expression, of communication, of movement, of assembly, or of petition shall not be abridged, except in declared emergency.
Right.
Who's declaring the emergency? Well, the government is, of course. And then it goes down here. Section 4. The privacy of individuals shall be respected. Searches and seizures shall be made only on judicial warrant. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Like our Fourth Amendment. Persons shall be pursued or questioned only for the prevention of crime. Oops, wait a minute. Prevention of crime. Yeah. That's thought police.
Right.
Or the apprehension of suspected criminals, and only according to the rules established under law. And this just keeps going. It says that basically that all people should have these rights, except now here's the situation, and this is where it gets us tied into what we're teaching at Institute on the Constitution. Section 8 of Article 1 says the practice of religion shall be privileged, but no religion shall be imposed by some on others, and none shall have public support. Okay, well then, who determines who's imposing what on whom?
Exactly. Yeah, I actually
well, that's
have
the situation you're running into right now. But if we say that our rights are earned and we have to give them up for the common good, well, Ricky, that means your right of religious liberty has to be given up for the common good of the atheists who attacked you.
True, true. Yeah, I have a copy of that Constitution, Barry. I never made it through the whole thing because it upset me too much.
Well, it's let me tell you, this book is written in academic bureaucraties. So it's sort of like trying to read some textbook on some kind of ancient political philosophy. It really is almost impossible, and it's written in a language that is undecipherable unless you know how to speak the words. It's these people are masters at using words that sound good, but they have different meanings than the Webster's 1828 dictionary uses.
Well, it'd be like trying to read Plato in the original Greek and then translate it into Latin and then into English.
Yeah.
I think that was something that one of our founders, John Adams, did when he was in college.
I think
right.
so.
Right. Well, I have a question in there, one observation before I go into it is that this fellow who was the curriculum director at the state level also apparently couldn't discern the fact that you were actually quoting something rather than something you had written up yourself. I guess he didn't read the document closely enough to be able to tell that these were quotations, because I know the way you write, and the fact is you would have made it clear that those were quotations and not something that you had simply cut from whole cloth. If he's reading those documents as, not very closely, what else isn't he reading very closely?
Right.
I find that amazing that someone who calls themselves an educator is doing such an awful job of actually reading the documents that he is supposedly vetting for use at the state level.
Well, another thing, part of this experience, which I know you guys are familiar with, but it really is true because it really happened here as well, was when they came after us and the famous quote, teaching the Constitution is not unconstitutional. I think that was one of those duh moments for the press that they thought maybe we better not use that line because that's kind of hard to argue against. And so when that argument would not stand, and when I was refuting it by saying we're just teaching what the founding documents say, that's when the character assassination began. And it just became ugly.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you know what it means when the character, when the fact search stops and the character assassination begins? Do you understand
that
means, what?
Well, they can't win it on debating the merit of what you're doing, and so I mean they've lost, and so the only thing they can do is start trying to rip you apart.
And what does it also imply?
I'm sorry, say that again.
What does it also imply? If you think about it, it implies that they have a built-in prejudice of their own. In fact, what it does is it reveals their bias.
That's true.
Because all of a sudden, they've got to get their viewpoint across. They're not taking they're demanding that you take a stance of neutrality. And they're claiming for themselves neutrality, but the fact is
there is no neutrality.
There is no neutrality, and they're demonstrating the fact that there is no neutrality and that they themselves are not neutral.
That is true.
There is no such thing as a vacuum.
Right.
There is no vacuum in education. There's no vacuum in policy. There's no vacuum in religion. Something is either true or it's not true.
That's right.
And everything else is falsehood trying to masquerade as true.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about. I want to know some of the details. I'd like to know the story step by step from how it started to where it stands currently, because I've read some of the stories that are out there floating around, and boy, it doesn't seem like anybody can get anything straight, because one of the stories I read basically said that you were teaching a class sponsored by the National Center for Constitutional Studies, which I know is not the truth. That is the W. Cleon Skousen group that is doing things.
Now, it's interesting. That's National Center on Constitutional Studies. You're right. They're teaching it's a one-day seminar on the Constitution. Now, it's interesting because in many of the media reports, there seems to be this admixing between the two, because the big problem that you and I have talked about on this program before, and I'll just be quite frank about it, and Ricky, you know, we're not lumping you in that you share this opinion. You can volunteer if you want to say you do or you don't. But the point is, the big problem with Cleon Skousen's work is that it is based in Mormon theology, and it considers the Constitution itself as a divinely inspired document. In other words, it puts it on par with Scripture.
Well,
that is absolutely verboten to us at Institute on the Constitution, especially Chuck and I, and we take great pains with our classes to point out very clearly, because we've had some students who've taken the NCCS course, and you start hearing that verbiage coming up, and we stop them dead and say, now, just a minute.
Well, I think, not commenting on that, but just on the confusion, was the fact that was part of the story, is that they were going to offer up the IOTC course this summer for the parents and anyone to evaluate, and they were also going to offer the Making of America, the one-day Saturday seminar, for the same purpose, to allow parents and students and everybody to participate, and then give them their feedback as to which of those they liked better or which one they felt would meet the need better, or neither of which. And so there was, I saw that too, Chuck. It was like they just couldn't take the two apart, or sometimes there was confusion, like they just lumped them all together as one big thing.
Well, I have seen this done by reporters in the past, that basically they don't really care to get the story all that straight. So they take notes, and they don't take complete notes, and then they get back and start to write things up. And they really just mix a whole bunch of stuff together into a big slumgullion and spit it out. And then when you complain, the editor comes out and says, we stand beside the story.
Yeah, I had a very interesting experience with one reporter, the Dayton Daily, I think it was. But I shouldn't say that, because I don't remember which story it was anymore. But they ran the story online. I don't think it was on TV, but I believe it was online. That said that the class had been canceled. And, of course, the class was never canceled. We got kicked out of the school because the school was flat out just not allowed anymore. They said, you cannot have the class here. And so we just went to find another venue is what we did. And we did find another venue. It was never canceled. It was just put off for a week while we found another place.
But look at the marketing you can do on that now. You can just say, come and see what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, well, but the funny thing was that in all of the reporting about how it was canceled, the one story that ran... class was canceled, but you need to, for those of you who were going, you need to contact Ricky Pepin to get your phone number. You guys still there?
We're having a little Skype issue.
I saw that. Okay, so then
I hate to ask you, Ricky, but could you repeat that little last part you just said, because it's very important.
It's important. This paper wrote a story online that class was canceled, which it wasn't, and said, so you need to contact Ricky Pepin and gave my phone number.
Yeah, was it just
The insinuation was clear that I'd taken people's money without, you know, having this class. Well, I hadn't collected anything from anybody because I don't collect money until they show up at class to buy their materials. So, first of all, the story was wrong because the class hadn't been canceled. Secondly, the story was wrong because I hadn't taken money from anybody. Thirdly, I mentioned number online to broadcast it for everybody. But the funniest part of this whole story is they put the wrong phone number down. So was probably getting some calls, although I don't know from who because I didn't owe anybody any money. But yeah, it was just a total slipshod, crummy job of reporting.
Well, that's because the reporters have been trained in the same schools that these kids are getting miseducated in.
Yeah.
Well, there's some truth to that. Now, believe it or not, I've looked up, I don't know, maybe 10 stories on this that are out floating around. If they put in your name, Ricky Pepin, and put in Springboro, those are the two search words, the three search words I use, Ricky Pepin and Springboro.
Okay.
Whole bunch of stories pop up. And I went to at least five of them, and a phone number was listed. Now, whether it was the correct phone number, whether it was actually your phone number, and they all said, for a refund, contact.
Yeah.
Well, you and I both know that that isn't for a refund contact. That is an attempt at harassment of you.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you a question. Have you gotten any harassing phone calls? Maybe this poor schlub who number got printed.
No, there's only, out of all of this mess, there was only one person that got really nasty with me. And other than that, I had several phone calls and emails that were very supportive. The one person basically said she was not going to participate. She had signed up for the class with her daughter, and then she was so appalled when she heard that we had this hidden agenda and we're trying to force things on the kids, and I should be ashamed of myself for doing that. But that was really the only one.
Well, let me ask you a question. What do you do to disabuse somebody of that notion?
I wrote back to her, Chuck. I thought maybe I could plan a seed there because she talked about my hidden agenda, and I wrote back and I said, my agenda has never been hidden. I've been teaching this class for 17 years, and you can go look at any of the documents and see what it says. And she wrote back once again because the word Bible had been added to the second invitation and it was not on the first invitation. Well, the first one also said, come and learn your godly heritage. Where do you think you're going to learn that? You know, and so the fact that the word Bible appeared the second time and didn't appear the first time, she accused me of, doesn't the Bible talk about not lying or whatever else? She got really nasty about it, that I was a crummy Christian or I was no Christian because I had the word Bible in one time and I didn't have it in the other time.
Oh, so I guess that because the same advertisements don't run every single time exactly
right.
The same television about an item, then the advertisers, the companies involved are lying because it doesn't have every single stitch of information about whatever the item is.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's some people you're just not going to reach no matter. To submerge this class or to sink this class, we had maximum enrollment cap of 50 people to meet in, and I stopped the registrations when they hit 58. So our closed class maxed out.
Yeah, amazing. It really is amazing what happens, and that kind of puts feet to what Barry said, that basically you can, very often there is no such thing as bad publicity.
Right.
That's right.
People very often are more discerning than the press gives them credit for. And sometimes that even happens in court trials, as we've seen recently. But that being said, I would like you to go back from the beginning and tell me exactly what happened, because we've kind of tantalized people with the we've shown them the fish, I want to see how you how the fish got caught, if you know what I'm saying. How'd you bait the hook? What kind of bait did you use?
No, Chuck, you're using too wild of an analogy.
I guess so.
No, that's all right. Yeah, Reggie, if you could kind of give us the blow-by-blow on how that got set up.
You mean as to how the class is actually going, or going back to tell you how Springboro invited me to tell them about it?
Yeah, start at how you were invited, and then tell us how it all kind of fell apart.
Okay. Two of the board members of the Board of Education of Springboro heard about the great success that we were having with our classes with the IO2C, and by great success, I mean that people who graduated were going out and running for office or starting citizen action groups or going to township trustee meetings or whatever, and now they understood what folks were talking about, and they were offering constitutional solutions. And this was right after, or right around the time, I guess, that this document, SB 165, was being passed about teaching from the founding documents. And so these board members thought this was a perfect opportunity to bring me in and show the other board, to have me talk to them and tell them, what is it that you're doing that makes this happen? Because this is what we want our students to do. And so I did. I went in and I presented just a very little short blurb to the school board, and there was probably about 20 parents or so there as well. And frankly, afterwards, I didn't hear anything for several months, and I thought it had just died in the water. But then all of a sudden, they got back to me and said, okay, we're ready to do this. Let's go ahead, and the way we're going to do it so that there's not going to be any school funds involved. That was one of the lies that was printed, too, was, you know, the school has no business spending, you know, government money on this kind of thing. Well, they aren't. You know, it's completely voluntary. It's totally up to the student as to whether they take the class, and if they do, it comes out of their pocket to buy the workbooks and everything. And once again, the way they were going to set it up, you know, was as one of the requirements, one way to meet the requirements for community service. Once again, there's lots of ways that kids can meet community service requirements of 30 hours in their junior and senior year. This was just going to be one of those options. But people were so upset when they heard that there was God in it, that there was religious content, that they backed off then and said, well, then let's just offer this class to the public and let Springboro residents go, and you tell us after you take the course, is this appropriate for our kids or is this not appropriate for our kids? It really got ugly because I believe the whole community, well, not the whole community, certain members of the community, once again said, you know, started accusing the board of cramming religion down their throats and teaching kids things that they had no business teaching the kids, and we don't need these things in the classroom. Well, I don't know what we need more in the classroom, but at any rate, it got very, very ugly, and to the point where the ACLU actually stepped in and threatened a lawsuit against Kelly Coles and the Springboro School Board for what they called sponsoring this course. And I think that was the problem. If they had just invited us to have a room at the school, we held this class at Kettering High School probably 3 years ago, and we did it in the evening because school rooms can be open to the public for use for different kinds of meetings. But I think the problem was that the school board used the word sponsored, and that's where it came across as, you know, tax dollars and everything else. And so she was basically told by legal counsel that they needed to get rid of us just because of the way that it had originally been structured, that we could be in very deep problems if we got into sponsoring such a course. And so she just kicked us out. They kicked us out, realizing that we wouldn't just roll over and play dead. We'd find another venue. And we did. And a local church stepped up to the plate and has allowed us to have it, Faith Alive Church. I'll go ahead and give him a plug because the pastor there is just a wonderful man. And Mike Rodenhammer is his name. And he has offered his church to us, and we are having the course there. And we've got kids in it. We've got exactly what we wanted. We've got high school kids in it. We've got their parents in it. We've got community members, and we've got senior citizens. We've got everybody in that class, and it's wonderful.
Excellent. I've been looking at a little bit here at other stories. By the way, did you know you made the Daily Cause?
I don't even know what that is, unfortunately.
Oh, well, and the Huffington Post.
Yeah, you're famous, Ricky. You have been across the liberal blogosphere.
Well, I do know that the guy from the Huffington Post, Warren Throckmorton.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Warren Throckmorton, actually, he writes stuff at the Huffington Post. Now, that's a sad case.
He's just a contributor. He's actually a Grove City College professor, and I know he's the one that tried to bury David Barton And that was a funny story, too, because he wrote to the Springboro School Board warning them about me and about Michael Peruca. And in warning them about me, he said, Pepin's motto is contemporary solutions with biblical principles. And my daughter was sitting at the table when I read that, and I looked at her and I said, I didn't know I had a motto.
Well, now you know.
This is almost like reading your rights. If you don't have a motto, one will be given to you.
Well, but I liked it, so it was okay, you know.
It's a good motto, yes.
It was a good motto. Yeah, it was a good one. But it was just, Pepin connected to me by email 3 different times because he wanted to interview me. And knowing his background, I never returned any of that because I had no desire to have him wield his pen and take me down, because I've seen, you know, the one interview that I did that I shouldn't have. She wrote what she wanted to write.
Oh, and they always do.
And they always do. And so that's why I did this guy, because I knew he would do the same thing.
You know, Ricky, comes up on another little side note here I want to just throw in there before we get back to the continuation of your story. What you're running into through your experience with the school is what many people of faith have been and will be running into in any public venue. Now, what we're dealing with here is a clash of worldviews.
Right.
We have a biblical Christian worldview that believes that we ought to have the engagement in the public square, the conflict of ideas, and let truth win overall, which it does, as we know. Unless it's totally suppressed and locked down and danced upon inside of a coffin, it wins overall. But what we have is the other worldview, which is a secularist, militaristic, atheist worldview, who believes that you don't have any rights. You know, you mentioned that earlier about that little excerpt from the Standards about your rights are earned.
Right.
Well, a friend of mine who's a state representative sent a photo that he took here at one of our national parks. And there's a sign that's been put up, big bolts and everything, and it says, quote, First Amendment expression area. And it says, this area has been set aside for individuals or groups exercising their constitutional First Amendment rights. The National Park Service neither encourages nor discourages or otherwise endorses these activities. Now, if you look in fine print at the bottom, it says, a permit may be required pursuant to 36 CFR 2.51 or 2.52.
Wow.
Now, that's how far we've come, ladies and gentlemen. Now, in a public venue, which a national park is, you don't have a right to free speech except in designated areas that the government sets aside for you. And by the way, you might have to get a permit.
You have to get a license to practice your rights.
Wow.
Well, you know what? I'm just like with guns, I don't think I'm going to line up to get that license.
Well, I want to go back to Throckmorton for a minute.
Oh, yes.
Barry knows a little bit more about him than I do.
I know Warren Throckmorton.
Oh, you do?
Actually, not well, but I know him.
Okay.
Back about 8 or 9 years ago, Warren Throckmorton was the celeb du jour because he was coming out very strongly about reparative therapy for those who have homosexual orientation.
I do remember reading that.
And Throckmorton was speaking around the country about this issue. And then all of a sudden, he flipped.
Right.
And he started then saying, well, you know, Christians need to embrace gays and accept them for who they are and welcome them into the church. And it's interesting because you go to his blog site now, and he's got all this stuff up there, but then he has this little disclaimer at the very bottom that his views are not the views of Grove City College. And it's like, well, considering the fact that Grove City was a Christian school, it's amazing that they still have him on faculty.
I thought that too, Barry.
But when a professor is publishing and he gets tenure, it's hard to get rid of him.
Yeah. Tenure makes it very difficult to get rid of even the worst players. I noticed that Throckmorton basically can't get the facts straight. He's one of the guys who's the source of this NCCS business, the National Center for Constitutional Studies. Mm-hmm. He seems to be the person that everybody keeps going back to, or the go-to guy.
He also very falsely accuses David Barton of misstating some facts on one of the teaching tools that we use in the class. And I went back. I actually had one of my friends do some research on to check out the accusations that he was making, and they were abjectly false.
And you know what he's probably leveraging from is that book that Barton wrote, the Jefferson Lies.
Yes.
And let me tell you, there are major problems with that book. I have a copy of it here, and I have read it. And we actually had a student in one of our classes question me very closely, and I actually went through and did about 20 minutes worth of research in some of Jefferson's original writings and directly refuted some of the stuff that Barton said about Jefferson in that book. Now, I don't want to say that Barton was completely wrong about everything he said about Thomas Jefferson in the book. He's not. There's a lot of good stuff in there about Sally Hemings and the problems with what's been done to Jefferson's reputation regarding Sally Hemings and that business. Because the genetic studies, and I am a biochemist, so I know something about this, the genetic studies don't show that Jefferson was definitely the father of her children. It shows that there was a male involved somewhere in along the family line. And the fact is that there's a lot of evidence that Jefferson's nephew spent a lot of time in the slave quarters.
Right.
So, you know, that the evidence is very bad for...
Well,
Now, where he went wrong was attempting to say that Thomas Jefferson was Christian.
Right.
Which he was not. Thomas Jefferson was a Unitarian by his own description, and he calls himself a Christian from time to time. He says, I'm a true Christian, which basically meant he followed Jesus as a great teacher and philosopher, but not as the Son of God, and he directly said that Jesus wasn't born of a virgin, he was not the Son of God, except in the sense that we're all sons of God. And, you know, he went down the litany. He didn't believe in the Trinity. He didn't, you know, he rejected, and he openly espoused Unitarianism and said that soon every Christian in America will be a Unitarian, blah, blah, blah. So this is probably what people are keying off of. They're now using this lever that, unfortunately, this club that Barton handed to other people to beat him with.
Well, but on that, Chuck, tell you what he said. Angered me after I looked into it. He talked about the one video that David opens with and makes a statement about the guy who brutally murdered a 70-something-year-old woman with an axe handle for her Social Security check. And then Throckmorton claims that David Barton says that because a Bible verse was used during the sentencing time, that he is... free. Well, David doesn't say that. What David says is that the sentence was set aside. And if you read the court case, whoops, there we go.
Yeah, we lost you for okay. About 20 seconds.
At any rate, if you actually, a friend of mine actually pulled up that court case, and that's the exact phrase that the case says, is that the sentence was set aside. And that's what Barton said. He also said that David Barton believes that the Constitution quotes the Bible. And the way he's using that is when David Barton is talking, he says, you know, if you look at the Constitution or you look at the Declaration and you see, you know, certain things there, well, that came straight out of Deuteronomy or that came straight out of whatever. Well, he's not saying it quoted it. He's talking right about the principles. But Throckmorton is using the fact that he says that came straight out of to say that he's saying it quotes Scripture. And that's not what he's saying. He's just putting a spin on the words to make it look like what he wants it to say.
Now, Ricky, the truth has never stopped anybody with an agenda. Now, you know that.
Right.
And Warren Throckmorton has an agenda. For some reason, somewhere in his life, he has had a parting of the ways with his Christian heritage, mm-hmm. and he is militantly attacking anything that would set up the fact that we have an authority higher than man.
Right.
Now, as a psychologist, I understand, because if we have authority higher than man that we have to answer to, then that means that we're responsible for our actions, and he probably loses a lot of business that way.
Could be. Well, the same thing was true when they were attacking Michael Peruka and trying to, you know, connecting me as one of his minions was the word that they used.
I would never call you a minion of anybody.
Well, thank you. But at any rate, connecting him with a particular organization. And again, when you go back and read the organization's, you know, the speeches and whatever, which I did, I went online to do some research to find out what they were talking about. And when the people are, they're quoting those who are attacking are quoting somebody from, I'll just say this, from the League of the South. And somebody right. was giving a speech there, and he talked about the, what did he call it, the Anglo-Celtic culture. And what he meant by that, if you really read and ask and clearly look at what he's saying, he's talking about the fact that we were founded under this Bible culture that came about from the Anglo-Celtics, if you will, which is what they were talking about. He's just talking about a Bible-based government, if you will. But when this person was reading that, and she, when it said Anglo-Celtic culture, she put in parentheses, read white. Or read white supremacy. Well, that's not what it said.
No. Basically, what he's talking about is the Scotch-Irish, who were basically the spark plug of the revolution.
Yes, yeah. that's exactly what he was saying. But she actually put in parentheses, telling people what they're supposed to think when they read that.
And there we get right down to it,
Bingo.
Ricky. That was the whole theme, is they're telling them what to think, not how to think.
Yeah, that's not what that said at all. And because it didn't say that quite clearly enough, she had to put in parentheses what they were supposed to be reading when they saw that.
Well, let's talk about Mike Peruka for a minute. I know Michael Peruka since 2004. He and I have remained, we're not as close as I'd like to be, but then again, he lives in Maryland, I live in Ohio, I see him about twice a year. And I am, though, close with Dave Whitney, who is the head teacher and who is basically being tarred by the same brush. And I think you're close with Dave Whitney as well.
I am.
You're probably closer than I am. Can you imagine calling either Dave Whitney or Michael Peruka or anybody attached with Peruka and Peruka or the Institute on the Constitution a racist or a white supremacist in any way, shape, or form?
Chuck, it made me so angry because people asked me, I said, you know, I never really stopped to think about it until this came up. But I have several graduates who are black. I have several graduates who liked it so much they took the leadership training and wanted to learn how to teach this. And somebody asked me when I said that, well, why don't you tell the reporters that? Tell them how many there were and give them some names or whatever else. And I thought about it and I realized I don't know who they are because that doesn't matter to me. I couldn't even go back and point at my different rosters and tell you which ones are black, which ones are white, which ones are whatever. I just don't look. My family is the United Nations. I have a biracial grandbaby. I have a son-in-law who's Mexican. I have a sister-in-law who's Vietnamese. The fact that people would call me a racist is just so abjectly stupid. It's unbelievable to me.
When you say that it would be offensive, Ricky?
It's extremely offensive that I need to justify who my friends are by the color of their skin.
Well, but Ricky, obviously it doesn't matter to them if they offend you, but if you offend them by saying that maybe our history was influenced by biblical Christianity, oh, now they're so offended that you don't have a right to speak anymore.
But they
can throw all kinds of character assassinations.
And you have to defend yourself.
And you don't get to defend yourself from it. That is the problem. But that comes from teaching somebody what to think and not how to think.
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't know how your applications for class look, but I know we don't have a race box to check.
No, I don't care.
Really? Really? Yeah. Yeah, wait a minute. No, and if we did have one, it would only have one checkbox, human.
Human, well, there you go.
Yeah, or since we are teaching a biblically based course, there are two races. There are the saved and the non-saved.
That's the way God looks at it.
Yep, that's it. And, you know, I too have... different ethnic backgrounds in my family. We're mostly German English, but we have Hispanics in the family. We have my daughter has dated young men of different racial heritages. It's really just
ethnic heritage.
Pardon me,
ethnic
heritages. They're all Christians, by the way, so they're a member of the correct race.
And I apologize for jumping in on that, but that's one of my hot button issues. There is no such thing as races. That's Darwinistic, atheistic, materialistic evolution thinking.
True.
Biblical thinking is we are all of one blood,
right,
as Paul says.
Yes, we're one blood.
And that means that there's only one race, and that's the human race.
That's right.
So basically, because Michael Peruka is a member of a group, the League of the South, and I know something about the League of the South, I have read For instance, books by the Kennedy brothers. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not. The Kennedy twins.
You should get familiar.
And you should get familiar with some of their writings. One of them being Reclaiming Your Liberty, which was a great, great book. What are the two brothers' names? Ronald and...
Donald.
Ronald and Donald.
Okay.
And they are twins, so their parents get some leeway in that area. But they're very good writers. They've written a number of other books, and you can find them on Amazon. And I would suggest you may even be able to find some used someplace. I bought all mine new, so I paid full boat for them. That being said, again, Michael Perutka, just one seriously sweet guy and one guy who's really concerned about our liberties and what's being done to the United States Constitution. He is an attorney in Maryland. He does bankruptcy and personal finance work. He and his brother are very, very involved in the pro-life movement. Michael ran for president in 2004 on the Constitution Party. And if I'm not mistaken, you just went down to Georgia, or you're going down to Georgia to teach this class to people who are involved in the Georgia Constitution Party?
It's next week, not this weekend, but next weekend, August 2nd and the 3rd. And it's going to be in Georgia, but they're actually reaching out to the 13-state region down there. And some folks, I guess, a few of them at least, are going to fly in for it. So, yeah, I get the chance to do the leadership training for the IOTC down there next weekend.
And
I've also been contacted by somebody in Washington State to go do the same thing out there in October.
Oh, wow. So you're going to meet our old friend Ricardo while you're down there, Ricardo Davis.
Yes.
Again, another gentleman of a different ethnic heritage than us who knows better than that Mike Perutka is a racist.
Right.
I worked very closely with Ricardo on some issues in the Constitution Party, and we worked very closely with Michael. And believe me, there was not a taint of racism while we were working together with Ricardo.
Yeah.
Ricardo's a great guy. He's a hard worker. You're going to love working with him. I'll tell you right up front, he's just a great guy. He'll work himself to death, though, and warn him against that.
Yeah, I've been seeing that.
He really will work himself to death in the cause. I've worshipped with Ricardo. We took him to my church once when we had a Constitution Party national meeting here. I'm no longer connected to the Constitution Party, by the way, folks. So if that's a question, I'm no longer connected with the Constitution Party. So, but that being said, Ricky, we really appreciate your time. I think we've got the issue here, and that is that basically you were strawmanned. You did your best to simply make a class available to teach the original intent and the true history behind the Constitution, and you were demagogued by people who basically have bought into a revisionist history of the United States Constitution. Would that be a fair way to put it?
I think that's a very fair way of putting it. They couldn't be bothered by the facts.
Well, we are out of time for today. If you want to know more about this, Ricky, where can they get a hold of you, besides getting your phone number from one of these articles? I know you have a website.
I do, and it was just redone, and so I'd really encourage anybody to go to it. It's www.rickypepin.com, RICKIPEPIN. It was just redone about a month or two ago, and a guy that I hired to do it just did a really great job of it, and it's pretty educational just to go there. And by the way, that's part of my funny story about how I didn't know I had a motto. When my husband heard that story, he said, "Isn't that what that guy who designed your website put at the on your homepage?" And I thought for a minute, and I pulled it up, and there it was. And I thought, "Oh, okay." So it was his motto, not mine, but he put it on my website, and it is a good one. But, so my motto, quote unquote, is at the top of my website.
And have you got any upcoming classes in the Dayton area?
Yes. As a matter of fact, September. September the 18th, I believe, begins a class in West Carrollton at a church. I don't have the information right in front of me right now. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but yes.
I bet they can get it on your website, though.
Yes, it will be posted on the website, and the website is going to have every attempt made to keep all of the classes that people send to me will be listed there. And so I send out announcements, but then they will also be listed on the website as well.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Ricky. We're out of time. Join us at our website, www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. We will put a link up to Ricky's website. We thank you, Ricky, for being with us this week. Please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.